refer to the House Committee on Rules for the purposes of a public hearing and possible work session, although probably won't be a work session today, on House Bill 2145. I'd like to open a public hearing. And would you like to tell us a little bit about the bills?
Yeah, you want to just indicate that we don't yet have a quorum?
We do not, let the record show that we do not, as of yet, have a quorum. We are opening the public hearing for purposes of testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Acting Chair, House Bill 2145 changes procedures for managing state agency information technology and information resources. More specifically, it eliminates the requirement to set information technology policies, procedures, standards, and guidelines by rule, subject to legislative committee review prior to adoption. It allows the Department of Administrative Services to adopt IT standards in consultation with state agencies. It requires the use of administrative rule process for the adoption of user fees, services, delivery rates, and long-term plans for statewide integrated video conferencing and online access services. It restricts the definition in ORS 184.473 of, quote, state agency, end quote, subject to DAS authority, over information technology by adding new exception for the Oregon State Lottery and expanding exceptions for higher education and community colleges. Standardizes terminology and deletes obsolete provisions. Deletes the requirement for DAS to maintain continuous inventory of each state agency's current and planned investments in information technology, and deletes authority for DAS to operate central repair and maintenance services or clerical and stenographic pool services to commodity commissions that request such services. The information technology statutes that we have developed in a piecemeal fashion over time. Meanwhile, the terminology used in the field of information technology has undergone change, as have the names, functions, activities, and or existence of some governmental entities mentioned in those statutes. Proponents assert that HB 2145 standardizes information technology terms and eliminates outmoded references to government entities throughout the statutory provisions affected by the bill. Existing statutory provisions require the Department of Administrative Services to implement state government-wide planning standards, processes, and procedures with regard to information technology. Proponents assert that DAS does not have the resources or authority to carry out those functions for statewide agencies beyond the executive branch. Proponents further assert that HB 2145 makes DAS responsibility for information technology consistent with DAS authority related to executive branch agencies. Under existing provisions of ORS 291.038, DAS is required to establish IT policies, procedures, standards, and guidelines through the administrative rulemaking process with legislative committee review prior to adoption. Proponents assert that the existing process for setting standards through administrative rule and legislative committee review is not practical. That's my summary.
Well, thank you. And it sounds like this is possibly a streamlining bill, but I think we have some nice folks from the Department of Administrative Services to explain it to us today. So, Dugan, you want to come on up and tell us what's happening here?
Thank you, Vice Chair Edwards. For the record, my name is Dugan Petty. I serve as the state's Chief Information Officer and the Administrator of the Enterprise Information Strategy and Policy Division within the Department of Administrative Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill today. I'll provide you an overview with HB 2145 and answer any questions you might have. The bill does change DAS responsibilities, and it modernizes, clarifies, and makes some practical improvements to a variety of different statutes governing information technology and telecommunications in the state. Chief among the changes are clarification of the planning and portfolio management responsibility that the Department of Administrative Services has. Currently in statute, it defines that responsibility as being state government-wide, which means that the department would have responsibility for portfolio management, which is a term used in statute, which generally means the review of projects, the review of projects' assets, IT assets, of not just executive branch agencies, but when we talk about state government-wide, it would mean the legislature, it would mean the Oregon University system, higher education, also would mean the court system. So we have proposed in this amendment to define state agency rather than state government-wide and have the typical meaning of state agencies being those agencies that have responsibilities in the executive branch for DAS, so that DAS would be responsible for portfolio management activities of those agencies, and those agencies would be obliged to participate in those activities. It makes a number of housekeeping changes. Currently, it uses the statute uses language talking about rules, standards, policies, and procedures. We've standardized to talk about DAS developing policies and standards. Rulemaking would, of course, be governed any time that DAS would be obliged to make a rule, as would any state agency. It eliminates the term procedures because what we do is we establish policies for agencies in the executive branch, not so much procedures. Procedures are things that they would do as they execute those. We've changed the term. We use in our planning process a development of an enterprise information resource management strategy, which identifies the goals and objectives for state agencies, information technology, and telecommunication. The statute calls for plan. We've chosen to use that term rather than the plan. It removes some unused DAS committees. Chiefly among those, it removes the Information Resource Management Council. The director of DAS is obliged under statute to call that Information Resource Management Council and convene that. It's made up of agency heads as well as some folks outside of state government. That council has not been convened since 1999. Directors of DAS have chosen to have more specific councils dealing with specific activities. For example, we have a council on geographic information. We have an agency head council on information security. We have an agency head governance board on the state data center. Rather than convening agency heads around the IT area, which would be a significant amount of investment of time on the part of agency heads. So we're trying to reconcile that to what is common practice. It makes a change in our IT standard setting process. As Mr. Watson pointed out, currently the law has been defined by the Department of Justice as they reviewed it to tell us that for the department to establish a hardware or software standard, we must do it through an administrative rulemaking, and then before adopting it, submit that to the appropriate legislative committee. The effect of that over the years has been to really reduce the numbers of standards set by the department. The only official adopted standard we have for information system software we have done in the last 18 months through this process, and we did it for geographic information system software so that we could combine on a common platform throughout state agencies. I think the impact of the law, probably not what it was intended to do, has had kind of a chilling effect on our ability to do standards. And I think what the legislature anticipates and expects us to do is collaborate with state agencies, but to adopt standards so that we're not doing a bunch of different things. So this would allow us to do that without going through an administrative rulemaking. It changes language around portfolio management. Currently, there's a requirement that we maintain a continuous inventory. We don't have the funding, the systems, or the ability to maintain a continuous inventory, and by that it would mean that we would know at any given time what our inventory of assets are. We do run an annual inventory and request agencies to update that inventory on an annual basis. That's within our capability, and I think that's probably makes sense to do. But we don't have the ability to do a continuous inventory, so we'd like to turn that back to an annual inventory. One other aspect of the bill is that the current law allows a state agency to sell a software product to another state agency. So we could license another state agency or another state to use a program that would be developed by the state of Oregon. Now, there have been times when commercial companies have wanted to buy a program that was developed in the state, and it was good business for the state to do that, but it's been difficult to do. So this would allow, with the proper Department of Administrative Services review, to license a software program and allow the state to get royalty in that area. So that's a high-level overview of what the bill does. I would urge you to consider this bill and to pass it into law, and I'm available to answer any questions you may have about the bill at this time.
Representative Hart. Dugan is seeing way too much of you lately. part of what your information letter says is key changes to current law maintain on a continuous basis and eliminates the prescriptive requirements for assessing total cost of ownership. Could you explain what all that means?
In current statute, there is a requirement. Vice Chair Edwards, Representative Gerard. In current statute, there is a requirement that in the portfolio management, part of the inventory and the continuous inventory is assessing the total life cycle cost of any of the systems that are currently in place and maintaining that continuously. And so this eliminates that specific requirement to be in the inventory. It does, I think, make sense to understand what the costs are over the total life cycle of any equipment.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely.
So does that make it then the agency's responsibility to keep their management portfolio upgraded and on top? In other words, if there's equipment to be replaced, it's now their responsibility to do it themselves without you policing it.
Vice Chair Edwards, Representative Gerard, we would still require the agency to provide an annual inventory of their assets to the department. But if the agency had a legacy system or assets that were getting long in the tooth and needed to be replaced, it is their primary responsibility to develop a budgeting or a plan to replace that. We might at some point remind them that they should be looking at that, but we would be getting that information so that we should be able to manage it in some central fashion and see if we've got multiple systems that might benefit from a joint project, for example. But it still would be the individual agency's responsibility to get the funding to move forward with the project.
One last follow-up.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chair. Dugan, is any? I noticed that it adds some responsibilities to the Secretary of State's office. Is there anyone opposing this bill, or
Vice Chair Edwards, Representative Gerard? Not to my knowledge. There are a couple of changes in this bill related to the State Treasurer and to the Secretary of State, as well as higher education, and those are, I think, completely consistent with the notion of having that portfolio management oversight to the executive branch, and that required some minor adjustments in their statute. It makes no change to the responsibilities that the Secretary of State currently have. It's really just language.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, double Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. Representative Berger.
Thank you. Dugan, it occurs to me that some of these sort of IT oversight things that seem archaic in this advanced technological age made a lot of sense when you realize that the state has had some real debacles when it comes to agencies purchasing IT without oversight. And I note you nod when I say this, so we know what we're talking about. I guess, how can you assure me that we won't have further debacles, that there are things in place here that make sure that individual managers aren't free to you know, go wild, if you will, in this, when there's a lot of money involved, and I think you know what I'm getting at.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger. The biggest change in this bill is to restrict that responsibility for promulgating that portfolio management system across all the state government-wide agencies. And so by removing, it removes the legislative agency, it removes the Oregon University system, it removes the Board of Education, it removes the court system. Currently, we don't have any kind of reporting or portfolio management or oversight responsibility, nor do we have the authority to really execute that with those agencies. So this, in terms of what we are currently doing in terms of having authority to oversee, to get portfolio management from the executive branch agencies, this actually makes no change in that. It does, I think, clarify some language in so much that it makes it clear that when we review their projects, we'd be reviewing them against an enterprise architecture and against the strategy that's developed in this. And I think that actually is an improvement. And the ability to establish standards for either software systems or hardware and do that more effectively, I think, is a key component of making sure that agencies, as they develop their systems, are developing them consistent with those standards. And so we have really the same obligation today. It's just that it's more difficult to set those standards because it's come through a rulemaking process and then having to be approved by the appropriate legislative committee. And my sense of that is that that's not helped develop standards. That's probably inhibited the development of standards. And I don't think that's what was intended, but I think that's how that's come out over the years. I've been in this position just a little over 2 years now, and I think that standard setting is something that we simply have to do more of. We have to do it in collaboration with the agencies, but that's one of the ways that we will not have people doing 70 or 80 different ways of doing things, and that I think will help us.
Thank you for that answer.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Dugan, could you clarify for me, you ran through everything that the bill does. Some of it sounded substantive, some of it didn't sound so substantive. What I'm looking for is clarification on whether or not this bill changes in actuality or in practice what the department is doing currently. Or is it just clarifying things that you already do, or is there real actual substantive changes? And then my follow-up question would be, if there are there links, although this isn't a Ways and Means Committee, but are there links to any of your key performance measures with any of these pieces?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edwards, there is not a lot of substantive change. There are policy changes because clearly the policy, for example, around statewide portfolio management and oversight was whether it was realistic or whether the authority was there to do it, was to have, as it reads, to have DAS have responsibility of that for agencies beyond the executive branch. So we're trying to bring that back to mirror what actually happens now. The standard setting is a substantive difference. And I think that that'll actually promote more activity in the area that we want it. Some of the changes are language. We've used the term strategy for policy or strategy for plan. I don't think that that's really any kind of a substantive change. When we review the current projects, we should be reviewing them against the plan. Now we're substituting and replacing that with the term enterprise architecture, which is more consistent with today's terminology. So that's not terribly substantive either. There's a substantive change in the area around selling state programs. That's substantive, but that's not a significant change. It's not been used very much. It's while we're in there, we might as well improve this.
Thank you.
Other questions? Then I have one, Dugan. I guess when I first saw this, the issue for me is that there's some other bills out here, for example, that have to do with kind of open books, that, you know, that we have the open books for the education deal where they actually go in and they manipulate the data. But just getting that kind of information from each of the different agencies to a place where you could actually search it with one means that the architecture has to be such that they actually are collecting the same kind of information, that they actually have the same size for fields, that they, I mean, all of those kinds of things to me are what makes an architecture work or not work in a system. And I guess what you're saying now is we don't have that kind, or do we have that kind of architecture throughout all of the agencies so that they could share a lot of different, especially just the financial information from each of them? And would this help?
Mr. Chairman, no, we don't have that. In some areas, we might be closer than others, but generally, we don't have a common architecture. And as we think about enterprise architecture, it's really built up of a lot of layers of designs. If you think about a set of building plans, for example, you might have the electrical drawings, and you might have the structural drawings and the mechanical drawings. Well, architectures in many ways, in my view, are the same thing. You may have a different segment architecture. So, for example, right now, one of the architectures we are working on in EISPD is a security architecture. So what should that security architecture look like? What are the policies and the standards that would make up how we would address information security as it relates to systems? Once that architecture is developed and vetted with agencies and approved, then there would be some standards that would follow from that. We would set those standards. Then when new systems are developed, we would expect those new systems to be reviewed against that architecture and those standards so that they may use different approaches to the system, maybe different integrators, maybe different software. But when it comes to the standards set for the security architecture, they should be the same so that they could connect up. Well, let's move that up a layer. We're talking about doing that same thing with geographic information, because we would want the geographic information that agencies collect, we have about 20 that use that, to be able to be interoperable and be able to fit together. And so as we move up, we would want other systems to have those kinds of interoperable architectures. Those largely don't exist right now. The statewide financial management system, to the extent agencies use that as kind of one standard, but not all agencies in state government use that in quite the same way. So as we develop new systems, we would want those to have some standards. So starting point is to build those architectures and then begin to develop standards so that when agencies build new systems, they fit up against that. And we have an eclectic collection of systems throughout state government that does not bode well in terms of efficiency or effectiveness or cost. Sometimes it's the way it has to be because maybe federal funding partners require things for a system in DHS that doesn't integrate and isn't the kind of common system. But from my perspective, those enterprise-level systems that go across all of state government, we need to move to common architecture and common standards to do that. And we've got a ways to go.
And you're saying that the way this bill is written, that is more likely to happen?
The way this, with this amendment,
this bill, yes.
Yes, it in two areas, I think it specifically talks that. One, it makes standard setting easier. And two, it talks about when we review projects, reviewing them against an enterprise architecture.
Okay. So the next question has to do with, I think that as I look at some of the changes and reflect on why they kind of put in there also the legislature, the judicial, and higher ed. The idea was it would be nice if standards selected for one were selected for all. This kind of takes them out. And so is there any place in our organization charts that allows the people who are building these architectures to talk to each other so that they can learn from each other as opposed to all of a sudden the executive branch goes off and does their own thing and gets it organized, but the others aren't in the same place. So now collecting information back and forth becomes difficult again because the architecture is not the same. Is there anything, are we losing something here that we need to figure out another way to make sure happens?
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand your point, and I think in at least in some cases as we revise the language in the Treasurer and the Secretary of State, it still has a look in their statutes to try and be consistent with state agencies. And so they're not cast asunder like others, but with the court system, With the legislature and with the Oregon University System of Higher Education, there aren't those, at least in this current statute, there aren't those kinds of guides to be consistent with how that's developed. And therein lies the challenge, because it doesn't necessarily encourage that single system architecture. But realistically, I think that's very, very difficult to achieve. When we're talking, for example, of an electronic records management system that could be developed, that's challenging enough to try and take on a system like that across the executive branch agencies, let alone trying to compel the other branches of government to participate in the same system. So I think we're not making that any better here. But I don't think we're making it any worse either, because practically speaking, we don't have the ability to make that happen anyway.
And the only place where I think that, for me, and the question is has to do is when it comes to budgets, if you don't have at least some of the structural ideas about how the size of each field, every one of them share that issue, and even higher ed, and better, different than K-12, because you look at how we deal with our budget. It's kind of like a line item budget in our budgeting process. So if we don't at least have some architecture that have that conversation around budgets, each of these people interact at the legislature around that particular thing at least.
Yes.
And it would be nice that you could look at one, ask for data, it would come into the others so you could manipulate and look at it. So I don't know how, and I understand this bill, that isn't the purpose of this bill, but I don't want to lose the idea that somebody's going to figure out in your system how they're going to manage their budgets with some kind of architecture. And I would hope that it would be at least compatible with the stuff that these other groups are doing, if that makes any sense.
Yes, Mr. Chair, okay. I understand what you're saying. In some ways, Mr. Chair, if we could find some success in the executive branch, it might be easier to grow that out. But it's a Herculean task to make it happen across the board, particularly if the department doesn't have the authority over those other branches.
That's true. And I recognize the lack of authority. So, I mean, I understand the reasoning for why this is written the way it is here. It probably didn't make sense the way it was before, and that's probably why the group hasn't met very often since 99. Other questions? This is one of those that I feel very strongly we're going to keep working on, because I think we need to do something. It's just the questions here have been really good on this one. Thank you very much, Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Was there anyone else that signed up for this? No. Nope. Is there anyone else that is just excited about coming and explaining to us and answering our questions that's here in the audience? I see no one rushing up to the stage. Thank you very much. So is this the first bill?
Yeah.
Okay. We haven't opened the second one.
Okay. So I will close the public hearing on 2145, and we'll open a public hearing on 2146 and a short explanation from Jerry Watson, our committee administrator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2146 authorizes the Department of Administrative Services by rule to establish services, rates, and user fees for electronic connectivity and access to state government information resources, such as computer conferencing, databases, the Internet, and electronic commerce transactions. It requires rates and user fees to reflect costs incurred in providing or contracting for electronic connectivity and access to information resources. It exempts rates and fees from the requirement for biennial legislative reauthorization. Under current practice, some government services provided electronically, such as billing for licenses and permits, are administered by third parties who charge state agencies for those services. Proponents assert that HB 2146 will allow streamlined recovery of costs and encourage greater development and use of e-government services. The Department of Administrative Services currently has authority in ORS 291.038 which is mentioned briefly in House Bill 2146, to establish user fees for video conferencing and statewide online access. Proponents assert that HB 2146 would allow DAS to also collect fees for the cost of delivering e-government services, such as portals to access state government services, agency online service applications, databases, and electronic commerce transactions. That's my summary.
And we have one person signed up. Dugan, would you like to come up and...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Perhaps we should consider charging a fee when we have an agency come in repeatedly like this asking for all these changes.
Thank you, Representative Greer. I have been looking at revenue options. I will send that over to
Thank you very
revenue.
Much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
And with that, you have
They just pass it on to the other agencies.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Dugan Petty. I serve as the state's chief information officer and am the administrator of the Enterprise Information Strategy and Policy Division in the Department of Administrative Services. I'm here today to provide you an overview with House Bill 2146 and answer any questions you may have about the bill. As Mr. Watkins described, this bill would allow DAS to collect rates and users' fees for e-government services, and those would be services that would be offered off of the e-government portal. Currently, that is Oregon.gov. We have probably about 130-some-odd services that are provided through that, including electronic commerce transactions that go through that. And it would also contemplate the possibility of if there was a charge for digital certificates, which is necessary for digital signature, to have that charge collected through that as well. It would allow DAS to collect a charge if DAS expended a service, and it would require a rulemaking before DAS could do that. And it seeks to exempt the biennial review that the department has in report that comes in for fees. So that's what the bill does. We have worked in ORS 291.005 because we currently have in DAS the ability to collect rates and fees for video teleconferencing, and this goes back a number of years, as well as internet access, and those rates must be approved by, at least as the law currently reads, by a stakeholder advisory council. We have another bill that would, since that council is not convened and is a mandatory council, and we're attempting to make it optional, that would have a rulemaking for that. But in this bill, we would have rulemaking for these charges. So why do we want to do this? What's the issue we're trying to fix with this? Well, currently, as I said earlier, we have about 130 services that we provide citizens and business partners over Oregon.gov. We've got about 83 out of 100 agencies that provide services and information through that portal. We last year did about $48 million in e-commerce transactions through our secure pay mechanism, and that's about a 30% increase than what we had the year before. We are growing our content and our number of hits by about 20% a year, so it's growing. But we don't believe that it's growing or we're putting up services as quickly as we should. And there's another problem with the growth, and that is that our funding model is based on an assessment to state agencies based on an FTE headcount. And so we have kind of a ceiling in our funding capability, yet we want to increase the number of services and number of transactions through Oregon.gov. And what we're finding is that just the cost to maintain it grows up over a year, and so our ability and our budget to create new applications is diminishing. And at some point, we will come to a time when we're just paying for the maintenance of running it, and we're not building out new services or growing new services. So, if you look at the development of e-government sites across the country. I think maybe 5 years ago, if we had what we have today, we'd be pretty happy about it. There were three or four years back, we were judged to be the third best portal in the country by one of the online surveys. Center for Digital Government evaluates other states, and the states that are constantly now in the top states for e-government sites use a funding model that allows them to either a third-party portal provider to collect a fee for the services that they provide, or the state has the ability to collect a fee and then pay the contractor. Now, that the latter one is what we're suggesting in this bill, the ability for the state to collect a fee and pay a contractor. But somehow, we've got to get to a more dynamic funding model if we want to grow the services and increase growing the transactions that the citizens are having with the Oregon.gov portal. And so this bill is an attempt to at least raise the issue and start the dialogue because we need to do something different. Now, our contract is expiring in 2010. We have a fixed-price contract with a contractor that provides a service, and we would like to change to a more of a dynamic funding model because we think over time, if there is a value proposition for the citizen or the business partner who receives the transaction, that the model that's been successfully used in other states could work here. That is, that people would be willing to pay a dollar or two as a part of a transaction as opposed to sending a certified letter or mailing or going through some other activity. So that's what we're seeking to do with this bill. I think that's what we're attempting. I know there are probably questions about it, and we may have to make some changes in this bill before it's done. But I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Garrard, since you began today, will I have the presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dugan, I got a problem with giving you a blank check for fees charged to the general public.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, I understand that's a concern, but I'm not sure how, if we are to make the model dynamic, and while we've seen this be successful in other locations where there is some methodology of being able to set a fee that is a value proposition for the people that get it for particular transactions, that can be a win-win for everybody. This does not intend to put a toll on any access to Oregon.gov, because that would be absolutely the wrong thing to do. But it would intend to establish a fee where the recipient of the service finds a value proposition in it. And that's the concept.
Follow, Mr.
Follow.
I have one more after this, if I may.
That would be fine.
Would it not have been more appropriate to have your dynamic funding mechanism in place before you came to us and asked for funding for it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrard, if I understand the question, if we would still need the authority to collect a fee, if I understand the question right. So we would have to have legislative authority to have the ability to collect a fee. In any case, maybe I don't understand.
Clarification,
the question.
Mr. Chair. Duga, what I'm asking is, you've made several references to the fact that you have to search for a dynamic funding mechanism.
Yes.
And that I'm assuming that's done after you have a green light for fee increases. My question to you is, would it not be better to have your funding mechanism in place before you came and ask for the fee increases to pay for this new funding mechanism?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrard, clearly there's something to that, or you wouldn't be asking this question, but I would want to make sure that we had, it would be possible for us, as I understand the statutes, to have a third-party provider collect a fee for a transaction. For us, we will have to establish that in a contractual relationship. So I want to make sure that we have a clear understanding and authority before I establish a contractual relationship with a provider.
My last question,
yes.
Mr. Chair. Who makes up the Stakeholders Advisory Council? And I'm assuming they're the ones that really determine the fees.
The Stakeholder Advisory Council, Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrard, the Stakeholder Advisory Council is made up of groups from higher education, K through 12. It's got some geographic diversity in it as well, private business people and agency heads, as I understand it. Now, that advisory council has not met maybe as long as 10 years. And I think that that's partly because that process is one that started out when video teleconferencing and maybe when EdNet was built, but that goes back, my time only goes back 10 years ago, and that wasn't functioning as I understand it even then. So that group is not, it just hasn't been convened.
And follow on that, and they would not be involved in this process that you're asking for today?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, in this process we would have an administrative rulemaking, so we'd have public hearings before we would establish a rule, and that's what this would require in this bill.
So final follow-up, and then I have
final,
Representative
thank
Berger's
you.
Waiting
patiently. So you're in final determination, it's going to be DAS who decides what kind of fee increases are assessed.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrard, yes, it would be DAS after having an administrative hearing and taking in public comment.
Thank you.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dugan, when we talked about this, it was my understanding, obviously, it was somewhat error, that what DAS is doing and is allowing a portal for other agencies to do their e-commerce, and that the fee would be charged back to the agencies, not back to the public. And the reason that this is important, I think, is that the and why I wouldn't really object to that, because presumably if you're an agency and you have staff who sits at a desk and receives pieces of paper and stamps them or does whatever they do to them, that to have a portal would save you a lot of those people sitting there stamping and would be of an agency savings but a cost to DAS. And so it would make sense for DAS to say, yeah, we're saving you money, but it's costing us, so we're going to charge it back to your budget. Is that but what I'm hearing from you today is a little different from that, in which you would be charging the general public a fee for this, and I can see in some instances where the agency would be charging the public for this under certain circumstances. I'm just not sure where you're going with DAS charging them.
Berger, that is correct. This bill would assume that DAS would collect from the purchaser of the service a transaction fee. So if there was an electronic commerce transaction, it was a $10 transaction, then whatever the cost would be, that there would be some collection of that would cover the cost of doing the service. So we might put up, for example, a licensing application, and it might recover $10 for an agency, but there might be a dollar on that would be recovered by DAS to cover the cost of operating the portal and connecting. But it wouldn't have been, as we talked about in this bill, it would be collected from the person who or the business partner who made that transaction, not from the agency. So
yeah, that's a little different than my
so
understanding.
It wouldn't be part of the $10 that they charge. It would be over and above that charge.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. That's different from
the $10. Yeah.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I could not have expressed it any better than Representative Berger. That was my question. But so I'd like to follow up on that. We're talking in the abstract about e-government portals.
Yes.
Could we put, give me an example. Give me a hard example of where DAS provides a service for an agency that's going to be, that the public uses. I there are tons of them, but.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative Edwards, There are would be licenses. We have about 130 some odd services that are on the Oregon.gov portal. So when a person comes into that portal, that the idea is that all these agency sites and all of these agency sites that might have a place for licensing or other transactions, they come in through that one portal. And there is a cost associated with maintaining, hosting, help desk support, running that portal, and putting up new services. If there's an electronic commerce transaction, we have the ability through our contractor to build out a store, as they're called, which would allow a person to come in and create a transaction online. Maybe they buy a licensing, or maybe they would buy a product or service, or they could buy access to a park or some activity. So they would come in and they would conduct that transaction using their credit card. And then there's a payment that would go to the merchant bank, and there would be money that would go into the agency's account over that. But those building those stores and maintaining that, maintaining the help desk function, all of that has a cost. And that's the cost that DAS absorbs right now and charges out to the agencies based on an FTE headcount. So does that keep
well? I think I'm understanding this. So I am going to give you a specific, and you can tell me if this would apply there or not. So, say fishing and hunting licenses, mm-hmm. Would that be something that would be subject to this Department of Fish and Wildlife using a portal via people that sell fishing and hunting licenses? And then by this bill, you would have the authority to recoup the money via rulemaking, not via necessarily the legislative process establishing what those could be or what's appropriate in our view.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edwards, that would be a perfect example if it weren't already being done by Fish and Wildlife through the portal with funding coming into it. So if we had a similar kind of activity that we might do in the future for which there was no current funding stream and fee being collected by an agency and paying the agency, then we might do that. But this is not intended to replace or change those existing funding streams that might already be out there for things that are provided through the portal. And there are a number of those already.
Or it could be.
I'll follow up with that one because I like this. We decide during this session that we're going to have, let's say, voter registration online. And somebody decides that we're going to open this new site, we're going to have voter registration, people can come in. But it costs a little bit to do that. So if you want to fill out the postcard and send it in, it costs you nothing. But if you go through this portal, it'll cost you $1 to use the portal to register. That's something that DAS could do.
That could be done. Whether or not that would make sense to do is another question that would have to be considered, and that's why we have proposed a rulemaking process to have a public hearing around that. So I think if we talk, Mr. Chair, if we were to collect a fee for a transaction, it would have to involve a decision that would be made with the agency that would be involved with that, and if they already had a fee stream. And it would also have to be made in the sense that there has to be good value provided. I think why these have been successful and this model has been successful in other states is because they have worked with the people who buy that so that there's a value proposition for them. So they're actually saving money buying it that way than they would the old-fashioned way. The system you described, that may not make sense for reasons other than price, and I think you have to have the public hearing for that purpose.
Okay, here's another one. DSL has remove and fill permits that people can get. It's a fairly long process, lots of stuff to fill out. You could fill it all out online if it isn't there. I don't know if it is now or not. I don't think it is. But anyway, fill it all out, and we know that sending that off would be a lot easier if I could sit here at my computer, fill out all the stuff that I want, and then get it answer back if it was all done correctly and all those kinds of things. That might have a value to me, rather than filling it all out, sending it in, getting it back, saying you need to fill out the next thing and so on. That I could see having a real value. And so you're saying around each one of these new things we want to add, there would be a set of public hearings, and out of that would come a structure that would be worked on through those hearings. In the final analysis, it would be set. Now, if the legislature said, wow, that seems exorbitant, I mean, we could come back and go the other way and say, you need to come get those fees. I mean, about half of the fees that we charge now in the state, it seems like, come back every time to a committee that's responsible for them. And there's another group that we've given them permission to do it. I haven't heard much from either of those, but we have both these happening. You're proposing this one would be one of those that this process would set the fee and we wouldn't come back here to check with us.
Mr. Chairman, as the bill is currently written, that's correct.
Okay. Representative Berger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a comment. Your example is stellar because I think there's a policy decision in that one that is really important to this body. And I'm a little uncomfortable, Dugan, with all respect, to the wide-open nature. I know you have rulemaking, you know, two attendees, about as big a room as we've got here, and yet some potentially really impactful things, such as charging to register online, could come out of it, and then we're playing catch-up. And so I guess I'd like to see this, Mr. Chair, tighten down a little bit more as to exactly what
went.
Yeah, I totally agree that we need the portals and that people need to pay for the services people love online services. I'm totally with you on that. But I just don't think this is quite as battened down as I'm comfortable with on what we're doing here. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel much the same. It's different than an agency that has a very narrow scope and does a very specific thing when you're talking about DAS that provides e-commerce services to a whole lot of, I think you said 83 of 100 and some agencies. I mean, that is too broad, in my view, to hand over rulemaking authority to for fee setting. I understand what you say about the concerns about currently it's by headcount, and that may or may not allow for you to recoup enough money to build out new services and to really expand access to e-government for Oregonians. I understand that, but as it stands here, what we're talking about, I'm not comfortable going there.
Along that line, something you could build it into all the agencies who are charging fees for whatever they charge fees for, to say that 5%, for example, of whatever fee they charge, if they want to have e-commerce proposal, is going to go to DAS. So that when they pay whatever the fee is, and they do it online, automatically you're going to get a portion of that. That would be another opportunity. Because most of those go back to get, they have to come to us to ask if they want the fee, and they would say right in it, you know, we're going to try to have an e-portal. We think that's really important. People are asking for it. Here's how we're wanting to pay for it. At least we know what's happening there, as opposed. So that's one thought, and I will think about some others because I get a little nervous. I mean, I agree with Representative Berger. My daughter's generation, if they can't do it online, they aren't going to do it. It's just, you know, when we had some people come here talking about voter registration, the reason I brought it up is we had a bunch of these kids saying, we don't know what to do when they give us this piece of paper to fill it out, and we get confused, and, you know. And
Mr. Chair, my favorite was they couldn't find a stamp.
And they couldn't find a stamp. So
that was my own.
So they're willing to pay something, even if it's the stamp cost, as long as they could just do it off their credit card or their parents. So, I mean, making this available, I think, is important, and I agree with you. I think there's a lot of things that are ahead of us, and I guess we need to look at some of that, too. You were mentioning, actually, before in a conversation that Utah has
Yes.
done a pretty good job of having this happen.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. There are a number of other states who have done a pretty good job with this model, and we'll look at that. But I've heard the members of the committee, and so we'll step back and see if we can come up with an approach that resolves those concerns. I certainly respect them.
And I guess my statement to that is every time a new fee comes out, we do get to hear about it. And if we had very little control over it, it is more frustrating. And when they increase any of the fees, we get to hear about that fairly quickly as well. So when you have no control over either of those things, it kind of makes it a little more difficult. So thank you for that. Any other questions? Thank you very much. And continues to be a struggle as we move into this new era of more and more use of this IT technology to do our daily things. And it'll be interesting as we work our way through this. So I appreciate both of these bills, and this one in particular, the conversation. So thank you, Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there others who wish to? No one has signed up, and again, I don't see anybody rushing to the podium. So I think we will close our hearing on House Bill 2146. What do we have for the rest of the day?
Well, two things you might want to mention.
That's right.
And also, Representative Johnson, both contacted.
Yes.
As far as I know, Representative Nolan did.
So we have it on the record, we do have committee meetings both Wednesday and Friday. We checked with Representative Girard. He is planning on being here this weekend, so that was a nice addition. Representative Gelser and Jensen and Representative Nolan had at least talked to me. Two of them sent deals just to make sure that it was excused and people knew that they had other prior commitments. Some of these other committees are meeting at different times and requiring people to be there.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
All three of them sent. Somebody came down.
Oh, that's right.
After we started.
Representative Nolan. So all three have got us that information. So they were excused for the day. I want to make sure that was on the record.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Since the legislature has frozen salaries of legislators and cut costs, I'm just trying to think what the difference between an agency increasing fees to another agency for a service provided is any different from what we are doing here. Are we not doing the same thing? And I know my original comment was made in jest about charging a fee, but there's a great similarity between what we are doing and what they are doing in that regard. I don't know where I want to go with that.
I understand. I the frustrating issues are that, and this is just coming from mine in answer to that, I believe that there are general purposes that government perform for all people, and that part of the reason for having government is we share those costs, and they might not directly affect me, but they serve the better good of the whole state and all of our people, and making it work is what government should be there about. When public safety is a good example, hopefully we don't need it at all, but when it's needed, it's really nice to have it there. And there are a bunch of those services, and so figuring out how to allocate those services when there are just a smaller population, say, that want to use e-commerce. So there, how do we pass that on to that group that really want to take advantage of that, which is part of the discussion here, as opposed to spreading that about to all people so we take it out of general funds? And I think that's a conversation that we have every time we come here. What are those things, in my opinion, that rise up to be general fund expenses? Education for our kids, to me, is another one of those things that we need to provide it, and all Oregonians need to share in that, because it brings benefits to the whole state, and government can do some of those things exceptionally well. There's other things that the fee structure seems to work, and I think that balance is always difficult, and then it comes down to, do we charge fees for people that are going to come testify? I think it's a conversation we have to have.
I just would have loved to have
ask Mr. Petty for a $50 check.
And then we would have turned around and we would have allocated it to the fund to send back to DAS to provide the service for us.
Yeah, that part we need to talk about.
Anyway, so I appreciate all of you being here, and we will adjourn this meeting. So if there's no further business, we will adjourn the Rules Committee. Thank you very much for being here.